All right, thank you. You may be seated, please. This case is called St. Jude's Company and Reno Solis, am I saying that correctly, versus the Roaring Fork Club, and also Alan Martellaro. May I have the order of appearances, please, first for the petitioner or the appellant?
Chief Justice Greg Pugliarola, III of the Court of Appeals, St. Jude's Company and Reno Solis, and senior business at the council table is paralegal. I will be here.
All right, thank you. Welcome. Counsel?
Chief Justice Scott Miller here on behalf of the appellee Roaring Fork Club, and with me at the council table is Mr. Jason Groves.
Mr. Groves? All right, and I take it Mr. Groves will not be arguing in the units room?
That's correct.
Okay. Gentlemen, you have an hour to present this case. That means each side has a half an hour. And you want me to keep track of the amount of time, if you wish to reserve any time, please. All right, let me go ahead when you're ready. Thank you.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Rice, fellow justices, Mr. Miller. Today, St. Jude's will present four major legal issues for reversal of the trial court's order in this matter. These four major issues are issues of law. Issue number one will be the granting of the de facto RICD, known as a recreational in-channel diversion to the club, that is not a public entity. Issue number two will be the water court's overruling of Chief Water Judge Osula's order by use of a summary judgment concerning his findings that St. Jude's did not leave its right to the historic John Cerise ditch nor access thereto, and that the facts of case 176 were entirely new facts. Issue number three will be the issue of attorney's fees in the water courts. We believe the erroneous ruling that imposed attorney fees against St. Jude's Company under a misreading of the documents involved in this construction of the ditch agreement and the release agreement. And number four, we will comment on the five title aspects of priority 280 and 364 of the John Cerise ditch. Justices, the water court took a very unfair perspective toward my client's case, literally harshly criticizing them at every turn for protecting our rights. But most importantly, the reason we are here today is to examine how this decree and these judgments work, because in fact they do operate contrary to Colorado law in all respects and do violate Colorado law under any analysis. Issue number one, de facto RICD. The law has been agreed, it's not in dispute. The recreational channel, the channel diversion RICD is available only to a public body in Colorado and not to a private entity. There is no dispute there. The public body has to meet certain criteria. So what is this thing called the RSC ditch, also known as the John Cerise ditch, also known as Spring Creek? Well, the facts are not in this point. We describe it the way it is described in the decrees and the way the club has described it for the last 15 years. Here is what it is without dispute. It is a man-made structure. A man-made structure built to mimic the Roaring Fork River, as the club describes. That word mimic is important. It means imitate. It is a flow-through structure governed by a 404 permit, which the club made specific representations to get that flow-through permit, and those representations can be viewed at footnotes 40 through 42 of our brief. It is a large man-made flow-through structure to mimic the river governed by a private property. In essence, it can fairly be described as a private river, taking its water from the Roaring Fork River. The operative rationale is discussed in the judgment paragraph 130. It has no control points past the head gate. It is a flow-through structure exiting back into the river from.
Is this in the ditch? I can't really tell.
Justice.
Is this in the ditch, in the river, or side tributary?
Justice.
Structure. And is there water being decreed to the structure that's being called downstream?
Yes.
Okay, so where is it? Behind the head gate, in front of the head gate? What? I just didn't get you.
Justice, the RFC ditch runs parallel to the river.
Okay.
To the club's property.
Right.
Meandering some roughly 3,000 feet parallel to the river.
But the structure is not in the river?
Correct.
Okay. That was my question. You answered it.
Correct.
The structure is in a ditch.
Correct.
Right.
And it is a ditch. It is a flow-through structure.
Okay. And so are you saying there's a decree to just run that structure apart from any other use?
Yes. That's what we're saying. This would be an easy analysis if the club had gone out and filed for a decree in the river. But as we go through this, the court has to ask itself, what is the difference here? What is the difference between filing on the river on an in-channel diversion versus just taking all the water through your own property for a status? That is the key point here.
Could I stay with that? I still don't quite get it. So does this actually leave the riverbed, the ditch, and it flows for a ways, and then it comes back into the river?
Yes.
Okay. And there's no use made of it other than its flow and appearance?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
But I thought, though, the General Assembly was addressing structures in the river to which water was being called. Is there anything in that legislation addressing some kind of what somebody does while they have flow in a ditch?
No. No. These are not. That's why we contend it is a de facto RICD.
Does that make it illegal? I mean.
Yes, it does.
Why?
Because
you said that only political subdivisions, can have an RICD, but the legislation specifically refers to the river in that regard, right?
For public body. Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay.
The club is not a public body. They've just diverted.
But they're not in the river.
They are on private property.
Keep going.
Yes.
Could I flesh that out just one second? Because I'm probably along the same line. But so are you saying there is no diversion from the river?
Oh, there is a diversion.
So there is a diversion. So it's not an in-stream.
No,
it is not. So then are you arguing there's just it's not put to a beneficial use?
Well, that, but it circumvents the statute. It circumvents the statute because you're just diverting the water in through club property. For the same purposes.
Well, does any diversion circumvent the statute?
No. No. Only this particular one, it will explain.
Is no other use put to that water that's in this ditch?
I'll answer the question. Basically, it's aesthetics. If you look at paragraph 130 of the decree, it bases this diversion on aesthetics. Now, there's some mention for fish. Okay. But you have to know that aesthetics are the main reason. There's no way in this flow-through structure to contain fish. There's no way to hold fish in such a massive flow rate. The club applied for some 21 CFS under decree under the cases 54 and 55. We also have to note that the structure is governed by a 404 limiting total flows to 28 CFS. This was entirely disregarded by the water court in its decree. And this is very, very important, because this is based on a diversion that was totally undisclosed to St. James. Totally unknown. Recall the ditch agreement we're talking about was in 01. It was not until 07, in case 54 and 55, that we found, lo and behold, the club has allegedly made this what can only be called an undisclosed appropriation. The undisclosed appropriation to divert another 21 CFS based on bank full flows. And that's very important. The decree of paragraph 124 gives the club the ability to overflow the ditch. This is what we call bank full discharge in paragraph 125 to the top and overflowing the bank. In other words, there is no space between the top of the ditch and the surface of the water. It's all taken by the club. And why is this in violation of the Beach Agreement? Specifically, this right was reserved to St. Jude's under the Beach Agreement. Page 7, paragraph 7 of the court doesn't have to term. But this right of an additional appropriation of this beach space, this reserved capacity, which is a property right in Colorado, was reserved only to St. Jude's in the Beach Agreement. Top of page 7, paragraph 7, it states, after reciting the specific CFS of floods that St. Jude's was entitled to, it states, or less ranch obtains water port decrees for greater amounts and enlarges the capacity of the ditches to safely carry such amounts. There is no similar provision anywhere for the club to make the appropriation they did in cases.
Well, how does it injure your client's water rights that they use the ditch in that fashion?
Justice, this capacity was reserved to us. It's a property right. It was not reserved to the club. In terms of water injury, we only got 82% of our water. Allegedly, the way they're running this ditch, the way the representative would work, they would run it under this decree for some 7 years.
Are you trying to run water in there, though, that you don't have capacity for? Do you have a need for that extra capacity of the ditch?
Yes. It was reserved to us if we wanted it.
Do you have a need for it?
If we wanted to, yes. Under the Ditch Agreement, we have a need.
Okay. And you could have used it on whatever uses you have, on your ranch, on their ranch?
We could use it for that purpose or the same purpose they are. If this is going to be legal to make these aesthetic diversions, we could have used it for our use. Yes.
Okay. Would you answer the question?
I'm sorry.
Did you try to make use of that extra capacity for application of water to the ranch, and you were excluded, your clients were excluded from doing that because they were using the capacity?
I have to answer that as yes. That's why we didn't.
Okay, so you made a call that would have been senior to their use, and you weren't able to use the water for the ranch because they were using the capacity of the ditch fully. To bank full purposes. Is that what the allegation is?
Well, not necessarily. This was reserved capacity by contract and reserved by under common law doctrines. Diversion, both parties divert a lot. They divert a tremendous amount of water here, much more than the decreed amounts. And so, it's a matter of we didn't get our water during the years they operatively used this. We haven't made an application to expand. So does that answer the question somewhat?
The confusing thing about this is there was a settlement agreement.
Yes.
And, the other thing that could have been done was to continue with the restoration of the ditch, right? You know, under the case that the court issued prior in the early 21st century, right? Okay. Then there's a settlement agreement.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
So it appears to be that most of the water court's concern here is that the settlement agreement isn't being respected. And I would like you to set this in context for us, because it's hard to understand how you can have a complete agreement and then you've got someone who doesn't like the agreement, as it seems to be, based on what Judge Boyd says, and it doesn't want to abide by it.
Well,
so would you give us a setting about what happened?
What happened here was St. Jude's did not just go out and file case 176 out of the blue. We didn't find out this extra diversion until 2007, when the club files cases 54 and 55 to take another 21 CFS out of the ditch. And under the Ditch Agreement, recited, those are our rights. That's our property right. Nowhere in this agreement did the club reserve the right to do this. If you look at page 1 of the agreement, the club specifically said that only those amounts and decrees that it was going to take in the ditch, it didn't reserve anymore. It didn't reserve the right to file case 54 and 55. It gave a grant of an easement to St. Jude's without reservation for doing this. Does that answer the question? I hope.
Continue on.
Okay. So this was totally undisclosed, and the water court disregarded the maximum capacity of 28 CFS under the 404 permit. It's a very leaky structure. It submerges our easements in water. That's the injury here. It takes all our ditch capacity. It takes all the rights under the ditch agreement based on an undisclosed matter. Most importantly, we think the court should consider that as a de facto RICD, it could affect Comcast, but it also ignored the Division Engineer's protests saying no more water, no more water in this ditch. Totally not considered here. Issue number two is the water court's overruling of Judge Osler. Judge Osler, as this court will recall, handled all the same juice money. All the remand hearing after this court remanded, and the early agreements and the early motions practice in case 176. And Judge Osler specifically ruled that St. Jude's didn't waive under the ditch agreement its right to the historic gate, the access that thereto, and that the facts of case 176 were specifically the facts. Our client was faced with a dilemma. When we found out about what can only be called a secret appropriation, we had to preserve our rights under this agreement because our fears was, as this case turned out, our easements are gone, our excess capacity is gone. So my client fled alternatively. We followed St. Jude's 1 that says file alternative declaratory judgments to determine what your rights are. When our theory of case 176 was, if you're going to take all of our rights, if the club is going to take all of our rights, the excess capacity, the easement overflows, you have to substitute these. You have to give us a pipeline or an alternative proper diversion, because all of our rights are gone. And unfortunately, we're in issue number three now on the attorney's fees. The attorney fees became a punishment for St. Jude's and a reward for the club. Not only a reward in the sense that nearly $1 million of fees would be levied here if this is not reversed, but more importantly, what is the difference in self-help here, the undisclosed appropriation? What is the difference between that and the self-help that occurred in the first synergies case? Judge Russell looked at these agreements. He was effectively overruled on summary judgment by Judge Boyd. Judge Russell said these are new facts. And if indeed these agreements were to be construed in any way as waiving St. Jude's right to the historic gate, there was a failure of consideration, and that they needed to be reformed. Well, Judge Boyd just took the club advocated reading and overruled it using a completely different interpretation. We believe that this was error, and that the facts here did not just come out of the blue. We had to file this case to preserve our rights, and we did. We did alternative pleading. Keep in mind, we never sought to remove cabins here like we did the first time. We never sought to separate ditch. We never sought to involve cabin owners. That was never the pleading here at all in any way. We believe the attorney fees assessment was erroneous, most especially because the trial court interpreted the attorney fees provision by not specifying the exact claims that were being waived the release here. The release agreement is just simply a blanket release. And the court found that this case is not arbitrary. The ditch agreement only provides for fees in arbitration, not litigation. But misreading the agreement and disregarding, in fact, paragraph 10 of the release agreement, which says if there's any confusion about basically how this arose or the way in which it is to be interpreted, the provisions of the ditch agreement on arbitration control over the provisions of the release agreement on attorney fees. This, we believe, is a total misconstruction. The early motion practice was supervised by Judge Osler, and this court needs to consider who was in a better capacity to know what the remand trial was, what the settlement documents meant, which Judge Osler passed on, and what the scope of these matters were. But he was effectively overruled. Our next issue is to point to the court that priority 280 and 364, the John Cerise, were split by the water court based upon a created ambiguity by the water court. The water court divided these based on two major findings or basis. If you look at paragraph 100, it states that it bases its findings on number one, an interfamily deed where a father deeded his whole ranch to a 9-year-old son and a 10-year-old son. These are not isolated transactions upon which we can base acquired title. When the boys grew up, the boys deeded the ranch back. But the reference in any of these deeds was not as to how the priorities were to split. It only discussed a half interest in the ditch. The ditch interest is different than the water interest. That is a major distinction here. The water court effectively ignored the most important thing here, which was the filing of John Cerise, filed 10 years before these deeds. In 1925, Mr. Cerise filed a map claiming the ditch for himself, naming it after himself, and appropriating 3.1 CFS, which was the capacity at that time. The water court gave this virtually no weight at all, no consideration. This was an important consideration. Aside from these interfamily deeds, Mr. Cerise, only 1 year after the 1925 filing map, gave a 4-sentence document to the club's predecessor, where he said, "You may have the right to file for an additional 3 feet in this ditch." But the water court tortured the word addition to construe it as meaning that there was already a water right with club's predecessor in the ditch. This is wrong under copyright law. This is entirely wrong, and the basis of this decree was based on those particular documents. So it ignored, most importantly, the filing map. It ignored, as the water court pointed out, paragraphs 88 to 96 of the judgment, where it discusses our analysis presented by our expert, Mr. Botham, considering all factors and arriving at the conclusion that priority 2A, the first priority, did indeed belong to St. James. The latter priority, except 0.2 of it, belonged to the club. We believe this was error on its face. And more importantly, we want to make sure the court understands how we look at this diversion. This diversion is no different than an in-channel RICD, although it's made on public on private property. It's bank flow discharge, which submerges our easements and basically takes the rights under the easements. But these high steady flows have no finding. There's no finding of volumetrics for the flows, for the fish, or anything in this decree. No finding on speculation or beneficial use or waste or otherwise. Unless the court has further questions, we'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
You certainly can. Thank you. Mr. Groves? Mr. Miller.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Miller, go ahead.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Scott Miller, here on behalf of the appellee, the Warren Court Club. There's 3 points I'd like to make today if I'm given that opportunity. The first is that we submit that this case is really about the strong public policy behind settlement agreements. Because although in 2001, this court considered the Warren Court Club to be St. Jude's, the exact same parties that are here today, and this court sent those parties back to trial court for a remand proceeding to determine whether the club had put ditches that they had altered back to their original condition. That was one of the options. Or the club had the opportunity on remand to try to prove that its alterations would not cause damage to St. Jude's. That's what the remand trial was all about. This case is not about that. This case is about two settlement agreements that were entered by the parties basically 3 days before the start of that agreement trial. And these agreements were comprehensive. They're appendices 1 and 2 in your record attached to our brief. I'm sure that you may have looked at them. We have a comprehensive ditch easement, maintenance, operation, settlement agreement that spells out all of the obligations of the parties to each other and all of the rights of the parties going forward from that point forward in 2003 when we settled this case. There also was a companion release agreement that was signed by the parties. This was a full general release of all claims, known or unknown, asserted or unasserted, that could have been brought, that arose out of the events, namely the alterations and the relocations that the club made. So arising out of those events, those were all relinquished by this release agreement, except for anything that was contained within the ditch agreement, of course. And so that's the first point. I think that the issue here is the enforceability of these settlement agreements. And there is Mr. Cooperola and St. Jude's argue that they have strong public policy in terms of ditch easements, and we would not disagree with that in terms of a general proposition. However, there is just as strong or sacred public policy involved in settling disputes once and for all.
Well here's the question. This structure.
Yes. Number one,
are they getting their water rights that were being interfered with allegedly in the prior case? Are they getting delivery of those water rights?
Yes, Justice Hobbs. They are. Here's the situation with Spring Creek, as counsel for St. Jude's mentioned. That is the structure. It's labeled on Exhibit A of this ditch easement map. Okay, it's called the Spring Creek John Cerise Ditch structure. It's the easement. Okay, we'll call it for shorthand Spring Creek. That structure carries all of the parties' decreed water rights, as in terms of irrigation water rights, as well as the club's additional water rights that are essentially for aesthetic, recreation, and piscatorial. It also carries extra water, let's say excess water for St. Jude's, that's not decreed, undecreed water, and that the club will deliver whenever St. Jude's asks for that water. And there's been no evidence that that water has never not been delivered. So, important to note though, this Spring Creek structure, in contrast to it being just a flow-through aesthetic structure, it does carry both parties' irrigation water rights. Okay, so the clubs, now, this is where we could get really into the nuances of that, but St. Jude's has, well now by quiet title, they have their portion of Priority 280. The club has its portion of Priority 280 of the John Cerise ditch, okay? There was a change case out there that the club did that changed Priority 280 to the head gate of Spring Creek, okay? So there's some of that water that's decreed. There's also some of that decreed water that is left stranded. And I don't know, Justice Hobbs, if that's what your question's getting at, but to be perfectly accurate, not all of the pre-irrigation water has been properly transferred or changed to water port to this Spring Creek headgate. And that's probably something that's going to have to be done now as a result of this quiet title action. There'll have to be some water port cleanup on that.
But in addition to the effect on the agreement and St. Jude's rights, am I right? This case also, because of the way it was joined, involves the validity of a separate appropriation by you. Is that not right?
Correct. So the club filed two water cases in March of 2007. Those were consolidated with what we call the ditch easement dispute that St. Jude's brought in the 07176 case. So so all of those were determined at the same time in the trial.
And so whether one characterizes it with regard to the Rigby statute or not, before us is the question whether you made an appropriation, whether you were properly decreed that new appropriation. Is that right, that you diverted water and you put it to a beneficial use? You've got an absolute decree?
Correct. And the reason we got an absolute decree, Justice Coates, is because the water court found that the capacity of the ditch was 45 CFS, and that amount of water had been diverted through this ditch since 1999, notably before the settlement agreement. So this is not some new structure that just appeared, and that is not some new water that was just started to be carried.
And the beneficial use here was?
So, that, again, the 45 CFS is not all flood water. Some of that is St. Jude's water as well. So, but the new appropriation was based on a 21 CFS of additional water for aesthetic recreation piscatorial. And you're correct, Justice Coates, that there is an independent question about whether we're entitled to receive that as an appropriation under Colorado Water Law. But the difference, the way that St. Jude's tries to spill that over into the ditch easement case, is that they're essentially claiming that our new appropriation is a breach of the ditch agreement. Okay, and that's what we would contest, is it's not a breach of the ditch agreement, because, well, the most simple answer is that we put right in the decree, our obligations under the ditch agreement are continuing, and we will not be affected in any way.
And do you think before us both questions are there, whether that is the validity of your appropriation as well as St. Jude's complain about the way that infringes on the agreement? But let's leave the second part aside. Just to start with, just the interesting question here about your appropriation. And I'm trying to figure out exactly the argument on the recreational in-stream flow statute. And is the argument, could it possibly be here, and do you want to respond to it, that apart from a statute allowing this kind of recreational flow, which must be in-stream and must be done by only certain agencies, that the purposes for which you are claiming this water are not recognized as beneficial use in Colorado?
Two answers to your question, Justice Coates. The first is that no, the RISID argument is not a valid argument, and I think it's already been essentially pointed out by Justice Hobbs that it has to do with the fact that in Colorado, if you have a diversion, that is an element of an appropriation. You must have a diversion from the river. We have a diversion. The distinction is that in a RISID, there is no diversion. So we're not even into we don't even get past step A in terms of comparing our appropriation to a RISID. It's not a RISID. It has a diversion. It has a headgear. And it diverts water onto our property, and onto St. Jude's property. Okay, so that's the answer to the first part. The second part is, if you would like me to continue on that, okay, is that, the definition of beneficial use is pretty broad in Colorado, if you look at the case law on that. And it really can be anything that the user of the water right, or the water, is putting to their use. And so recreation and aesthetics and piscatorial, the stocking of fish, are actual uses. This is not just a flow through river that has no use at all. We're talking about what's called Spring Creek. It's a feature on a golf course. And so it runs along the 15th hole. And so there is a recreational component to having it. The second part of the second aspect of this Spring Creek is that there is actually fishing in Spring Creek as well. So
in this ditch?
Yes.
You're fishing in the ditch?
Yes.
And the aesthetics are what? The sound and running water?
The aesthetics are, there are cabins that are along this ditch. As this court's aware, there was cabins built, sort of golf course development, and there were cabins built along, nearby.
Right.
And so there was testimony at the trial about how this ditch is actually used in terms of aesthetics and for, it's actually a very important and integral feature of the whole golf course, residential environment.
Are people boating in that ditch?
No.
Kayaking?
No.
Well, what is the structure then that council is trying to say is equivalent to the kayak course? for which the risks exist.
Well, it's what we're calling Spring Creek is what he's claiming, but he'd have, you would think it's some huge river. I mean, there are wide spots, and by the way, the old Johnsonville East Ditch had some wide spots in it too. So it is a wide ditch, and that was why we had to go make an appropriation, get a plan for augmentation. It's wide enough that it's kind of beyond the state's general definition of a ditch, which is, you know, something that your typical.
But it's not storage at all, is that right?
Well, it's not storage, no, but it does, because it is a wide enough structure, it does, as our division engineer found, Alan Marlowe, at first they treated it as a flow through, more of like a feudal call type thing. It goes in, goes out, no damage to the Roaring Fork River. That policy has changed at the state, and they basically asked very strongly for us to go ahead and augment any evaporative losses off the top of this structure. So it is wide enough to essentially have evaporative losses, which is the purpose of our plan project.
If I could just say, sort of behind this and where I'm sort of trying to sift out, is you may remember, although we did not publish any cases, we dealt with the kayaking problem and the question of whether a flow rate in itself could be a beneficial use. And the court split down the middle on a divided court basis and affirmed several cases by operation of law, but never wrote. Arguably, given the timing, that may have been a precipitating factor for some of the statutory changes dealing with in-stream flows. But my question is related to what you're doing here. Since you don't have a storage, but you're arguing for piscatorial use as a beneficial use, but it seems that you're arguing for that based strictly on a flow rate. Is that?
Well, there's a flow rate obviously associated with our claims for the uses, but that was not an arbitrary flow rate. There was quite a bit of testimony about whether the 21 CFS was absolutely necessary without waste to achieve the purposes that we were applying for. And so you had expert testimony and you had expert rebuttal on that. And so, you know, Judge Boyd, in his role as the water judge, had to weigh that competing evidence and the experts, and he came out with a factual conclusion that the 21 CFS had been proven as being beneficially used by the club for these in-channel uses, and that it did not deter or in any way from the club delivering its water to St. Jude's under the ditch agreement. And so he harmonized that and gave us the decree.
Could I ask you just one final on this? Are you aware of any published case or anything that would indicate that we have recognized in the state an appropriation for a flow rate for piscatorial purposes? So as a beneficial use for piscatorial purposes, not as a result of the statute and meeting the requirements of the statute for recreational purposes, and also not for storage as the beneficial use, mm-hmm. but rather simply to increase a flow rate for piscatorial purposes.
I'm not aware of a case that has made it to the Colorado Supreme Court on that. I'm very much aware of district court, of water court decrees that are out there. I think you'd actually look at many of the golf courses around our state have water features that are on the golf courses. I mean, I know we have applied for water rights for water features that are flow through, that are more than just, you know, obviously there's a lot of ponds on most golf courses, but there's also connecting streams that can get pretty wide and they end up being a hazard on the golf course, right? So you hit your ball into that and take one stroke penalty or whatever. So, I think if the rule is in Colorado, you can no longer have an in-stream flow for piscatorial, aesthetic, or recreational. Well, you're going to be upsetting quite a few decrees that there are out there, but they're at the trial.
Well, but those weren't appealed. And I think that Justice right. Coates makes a good question. I'm going to ask this again. Is Spring Creek an old channel of a river or a side channel, or is it a ditch?
It is a ditch. It is a ditch because it has a headgate, a brand new headgate that, brand new constructed in 1999. Okay. it diverts water from the Roaring Fork River.
Right.
Has a partial flume just several feet down from the diversion point. It flows through. It is co-mingled. You'll hear that word because that was something that was in the previous case. It's co-mingled with parts of the, what we call the old John Cerise ditch.
Right.
And so when the club constructed its property, it co-mingled all this water together, put in the new head gate, abandoned the old head gate for the John Cerise ditch. Okay. Carried both parties' water through this, but I don't know if I'm answering your question, but the point is that the old John Cerise ditch was not a narrow little typical irrigation ditch. It also had wide spots. And so it was in a, it was actually parts of it were sort of in a floodplain, river bottom area. So at one point, I mean, you're not talking about like a ditch that's constructed on dry ground type situation.
Okay.
So
but it is not a natural channel of the stream.
Correct.
It's a ditch structure. Now what about this claim, I think council is asserting here, that they own capacity in this structure that you are occupying, you are excluding them from?
First of all, it's a mischaracterization to call that some kind of real property interest that we're taking. We have entered into a contract to deliver them up to 16 CFS of water out of the Spring Creek structure, because they have a lateral slide gate that goes off of this Spring Creek, okay? That's where they can take their water over to their range and use it. We have agreed by our contract that we will deliver up to 16 CFS so long as water is physically and legally available and is consistent with the historic amounts of delivery. Now, St. Jude has tried to convert this to a fixed property interest, as if there's a, and this is where Judge Boyd pointed this out in his order. He said, look, we think St. Jude's is over-reading the agreement on this. And if you look at that provision in paragraph 7, it doesn't say that this is a fixed delivery obligation, 16 CFS, 365 days of a year, that we are now taking from. The second point on is that all of this is essentially tantamount to like an anticipatory breach contract. There was no proof, and there's still no proof, that club has failed to deliver any of this water, any of you, even this excess water, much less its decreed water. Okay? And so their whole theory is based on a fear that somehow by the club's appropriation that we have kicked them out of the ditch, you know, and that they will not get their water. It's just not true. It's the same water. Because our water is flow through, we, and then the easiest response, which we made to Judge Boyd, and he accepted, was that, look, the club, this, we're talking about a pre-river condition, the water going through that ditch. At that point, it doesn't matter. The club does not have to appropriate 21 CFS. We can always decline to divert our water to meet our obligations. And we're so concerned and firm about that, is that we put that as a condition in the decree. That this decree, the 21 CFS that they claim is kicking them out of it, we said in the decree, right, in paragraph 20, I can't remember which one, but the end of the decree, it says, this appropriation in no way supersedes, affects, does anything to the ditch agreement, club's continuing obligations.
Now, in the prior cases, you're well aware, there was an analysis and a restatement was used and talked about the burden of ditch easements.
Yes.
This Spring Creek, is it burden the land of Roaring Fork only in the stretch that we're talking about, or is it on the property of St. Jude?
No, the easement that's at issue in this case is only on the Roaring Fork Club property.
Right.
Of course, like I was explaining, is that there's a what we call the seventh lateral, fairway lateral takeout. They have a takeout off Spring Creek that carries their water over to their property. But there's no dispute about that. If I can go back to one other point that you made, Justice Hobbs, was, is there a use by St. Jude's for this? And the testimony did come out that they're only irrigating 7 acres at this time. They had up to maybe 13 acres of irrigable acreage. So you have to sort of put that into the context of this sort of super water right they've created out of this 16 CFS, which is not even decreed water. I don't know if that answers your part of the general.
Well, my question has to do with about the burden on the landowner.
Yeah.
The easement, this ditch easement is on Roaring Fork's land.
Yes. And now, this ditch easement has been converted to an express deeded easement. We're no longer talking about what we were talking about in 2001, which were prescriptive easements, implied easements that have been altered.
So explain that, would you? What does the deeded easement say?
So the deeded easement is in the ditch easement agreement, which is on your appendix. Okay, the deeded easement carefully describes, it actually has three different widths to it, inspection width. It has a map that carefully surveyed the exact location, dimensions, and course of this Spring Creek, and that is the easement that we have granted to St. Jude's. And so that is the reason, and then there are obviously follows from their provisions that deal with how we maintain the ditch. It's the club's responsibility to maintain the ditch. It's the club's responsibility to operate the headgate. It's the club's responsibility to deliver water. And all of those obligations were proven at trial, which is what we've been complying with.
So the decreed water right does have a right to go through this Spring Creek ditch, and there is a right to have it delivered onto their property.
That
is spelled out in this agreement.
Well, the agreement certainly contemplated it in the very third recital. It says the parties will carry their water decree to the John Cerise ditch in the Spring Creek John Cerise ditch channel, then surveyed that on Exhibit A. Okay, so that was certainly the intent. The club had changed their water rights to the RFC ditch headgate. St. Jude's had not changed their water rights at that time. Now, and when the club did that, the club property owned all of this prior to 280. So it changed all of its water right 280 to that headgate. And so now the fact that we have a quiet title action, both parties share in that priority 280, there is a bit of a question about, you know, how much water of St. Jude's is legally changed over to the RFC ditch already, how much has to still be changed. And then the club, of course, now there's this other party that they're going to change. So the long and short of it is that there's still some water court work that needs to be done to change the points of diversion to match up with the easements. And that's where, if you look in the order where Judge Boyd was talking about the, you know, we in Colorado, Justice Hobbs and this court knows that Archuleta Gomez says that the ditch easement interests and the water right interests are two separate real property interests, and they can be separated. And one can be abandoned without the other. And so the heart of the dispute as to opening up this whole point of diversion for St. Jude's is that was abandoned, that was relinquished by the release agreements, by the settlement, okay? Club did not have to restore that ditch, did not have to restore that point of diversion. It would not have just silently allowed, you know, another point of diversion without an easement. It doesn't mean the water right was abandoned. It just means that St. Jude's then had to take action under its own power to go to water court and match up any of the water rights with their points of diversion. The final thought on that is that because St. Jude says in the briefs that they have almost like a adjudicated point of diversion that transcends everything else, transcends the entire, you know, all of the agreements. Well, the fact is their so-called adjudicated point of diversion is not even at the old or the historic point of diversion. And there was a lot of testimony at the trial about this, but both experts essentially ended up agreeing that the decreed point of diversion is actually in somewhere else. Well, they all agree that it's actually right now legally described at a point that is out in the field. It's not even attached to the river. So, and there are many decrees in the state where the adjudicated point of diversion does not actually match up. And that's why every water right owner has the right to go to court, water court, and have their water right changed. And Justice, I'm sorry, and Judge Oswald pointed that out, and even in the oral argument, which, by the way, he looked at this case early on. He said he wasn't prepared at that time to grant summary judgment. It doesn't mean that he ruled in favor of one part or the other. But
he said the pregnant question in the room is, in light of these settlement deals, why didn't you just go change your water rate to match up with the easement that's pretty clear that was granted to you in these agreements? And, you know, I think St. Jude's only response was, well, we didn't want to incur that type of cost for that. And so I think in hindsight, now that we're 4 years and 8 days of trial, this type of litigation, that would have been a pretty expedient solution to the problem of the water rate.
Can you give me one more factual answer here?
Yes.
This flow through the golf course, how long is it before that Spring Creek goes back into the river?
The flow through is, I believe the testimony was about a little less than a mile.
About a mile?
Yeah.
So it's connecting up to the main channel?
Correct. And that's showing, you know, if you look at your exhibit 827 in the record, that shows exactly, it's an aerial photo, shows the ditch easement, shows the intake, the head gate, and then the flow through and back to the river. It ends up going back to the river, still on the flood property. So it's all.
Are there intervening diversions on the Roaring Fork in between the new head gate and where it comes back in?
No. Good question, Justice Hobbs. There are no intervening water rights there. Except for the CWCB in-stream flow.
Right.
Yeah. And so there would be an issue there with a change case. And the club dealt with this too. If you're changing your point diversion from the old John Cerise head gate upstream to the RFC ditch or the Spring Creek head gate, yeah, you do have an intervening CWCB. But that change was done successfully by the club. And that stretch of river, by the way, Michael Arion, our expert, testified, and it was unrebutted, that stretch of river, the CWCB has never replaced a call in that stretch.
And it is the Roaring Fork.
Oh, the Roaring Fork, yes. The CWCB has an intervening in-stream flow there, but that's a large section of the Roaring Fork River, and that in-stream flow has always been satisfied historically. And so I think I got through my first point on settlement policy. my second point, and I think we talked about this, was that the rest of their claims essentially are a way to try to claim such an egregious breach of this ditch agreement that somehow they're entitled to all of these extraordinary remedies, like a new pipeline across the club property at a different point of diversion, restitution, damages, termination of all of the agreements. Well, we don't even get there because Judge Boyd, as the fact finder, said that the club has been performing under the agreements. It did not breach the agreements, much less materially, to the point where St. Jude's could declare it was terminated and ask for all of these other remedies that had already been released by the settlement agreement. But the final point was on attorney fees. Judge Boyd simply just did a plain reading, plain language reading of the lease agreement, which says very clearly that the court shall award reasonable attorney fees to the prevailing party in the event it is necessary for any party to request judicial intervention to enforce this agreement. And the agreement that I'm reading from is the release agreement. And so the club's, the heart of the club's defense was based on the release agreement, that these were almost identical claims that were brought in the previous litigation. And if I might, just because I see I'm running out of time, I think there was a question about, Judge Boyd did not identify what claims were actually released. We're going to give you an example of an almost identical claim, okay, from the St. Jude's amended remand complaint from 2002. They were seeking an injunction enjoining defendant from further trespass upon the ditches, including the John Cerise ditch, interference with the ditches, their rights of way, and plaintiff's historic water rights and access thereto. And compare that and juxtapose that with their current complaint in 07-136, which says verbatim, club should be permanently enjoined from obstructing and trespassing upon St. Jude's access to its John Cerise head gate and water rights. So, That was our problem. That was our defense. Is that if you're bringing the same claims that were with us, I see a lot of time.
Yes, you are. Thank you. We appreciate your argument. You have some time left, it looks like 8 minutes or so.
Thank you, Chief Justice. First of all, St. Jude's believes in the sanctity of the agreement, and of everything discussed, there are absolutely no provisions anywhere in this ditch agreement for the club to do what they did. It is a material breach by an agreement of the parties that those specific flows and specific rights that were put in here were all that was reserved. Number two, I need to clear up that in the recitals, it mentions case 97C-53. And that was a club's case that was incorporated into here, where the club made specific representations to the water court that the historic ditch was in fact the corrected legal description, and the decree was issued allowing the club to divert 280 and 364 specifically at that historic thinking. That's a very uncomfortable situation now, but that corrected all these legal descriptions de facto to make the historic head gate valid. I want to take this from the standpoint of the water court just takes this decree in the states by taking the excess capacity from the ditch. That's all. Jacobucci case of 1975 stated that that excess capacity is a property right. We need to look at what would the practical effects of affirmance be. Number one, it would be that they can divert 280 and 364 at the historic head gate, but we can't. We would have to move from the historic head gate up to the RFC head gate, a de facto change of irrigation rights for use for aesthetics, because if it's diverted at the RFC head gate, it's all used for aesthetic flows, de facto, cascades, high flows, bankful discharge, for aesthetics among cabin owners. That would be the practical effect of changing this decree. So they could decree that they diverted the historic. We can't. The stipulation in the decrees that it doesn't affect the ditch agreement confuses things more than it does. Now moving to the historic head specifically violates the Empire Law, the issue cases we put in our supplemental authorities. This exact situation is already considered by the court. If you force a dominant easement landowner, or in other words, if a serving landowner, such as a club where this ditch is located, cannot use the dominant estate's water right for recreational purposes. That's exactly what's going on here. Bijou versus Empire, and the companion case to it specifically prevents that. What's the difference between that case where the underlying landowner tried to use the surface water rights for irrigation, for recreation, and irrigation rights? What's the difference between what's occurring here? They're using these irrigation rights de facto for aesthetic purposes. Under any analysis, this is wrong. If you analyze it under an RICD statute, it didn't meet the standards that a public body would have to meet. If you analyze it as a private diversion, there's no findings here for beneficial use. There's no standards for aesthetic use. Quite frankly, I can't express it any better than the billionaire standard of appropriation. Whatever looks good at the time, you're there going by the porch of your cabin. The higher the flows, the better. How have we ever decreed water like this before in Colorado? And what impact would it have on the context? It would essentially be a punishment to St. Jude's and a reward to the club for self-help. If you analyze this under common law ditch capacity, it's an overburden on the easement. It's injury there, it's taking of a reserve property. If you analyze it under the ditch agreement, it's a material breach. If you analyze it under basic appropriative use, and I'll have to state that water is being decreed, and this division a lot different than I see a decree elsewhere, and then with the practitioner of the South Platte. And the diversions and the decrees seem like it's two separate states, but it's not. It is one state, in fact. And so an affirmance of this would lead to a lot of absurd results, especially in the fact that we would have to de facto change our water lines to an aesthetic line. It's a change mandated by a contract, basically a de facto. And that's what these rights are being used for. That's largely what this is about. The historic head gate. Again, this was not just merely going out and breaching the ditch agreement by filing a case. This case resulted from their actions in cases 54 and 55, some 7 years after the additional, after the initial ditch agreement was signed. 2001 was the ditch agreement. 2007, we lo and behold, that there was some undisclosed appropriation. It is undisputed. There is no notice of that sanctions, no consent, no approval, no following the guidelines. And in paragraph 70 or 80, the water board essentially acknowledges that that, in fact, was a material change. But because it was undisclosed, it's not legitimate. How can that be? It can't be.
Well, let's assume now, let's assume that we might agree with you, there's no aesthetic, beneficial use. Let's agree with that. But let's take a look at that deed of easement that would get your water to your clients, would get the water to your clients' property. If it's just running through there, it's going to have the same kind of effect, is it not, on aesthetics that the golf course people enjoy? I mean, running water has some aesthetic, irrigation water running through a ditch, it's beautiful.
I agree.
So if we were to knock out the aesthetic decree, what would the result be?
Well, the result would still be that they're using it for aesthetics under earlier decrees.
But the point is, irrigation water looks beautiful. It's water. It's coming down as long as your client's water rights are being satisfied through this deeded easement. What's the problem?
The problem is that it puts us through water court, and the big issue here is they need these irrigation flows for aesthetics. And if it's going to be used for piscatorial, it's not adjudicated for piscatorial.
So you're saying the change of water right was not addressed in the underlying agreement?
No.
That you're entitled to divert at the old head gate?
You're right, because they are, and that was a specific representation in this contract, that we could do that. And sure,
is it physically possible now for you to do that?
Yes, sir. And I want to clarify, Justice, that head gate is open, existing, it's operable, and was never closed. And this is not re-tearing this whole thing apart.
But does it go across their land, club's land?
Yes, it does. Uh-huh. But surely, such absurd results could not be the law in Colorado. And that's what an affirmance would lead to, is basically the use of this water for which it's not adjudicated. We believe this court will so speak. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Cucurella. Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. I appreciate your arguments. And the court is in recess.